Hey everybody, this is Chris, and welcome to Games for Two. I am joined today by my friend Dave.
Hey.
And we are going to talk about our favorite 10 games currently. And these could change at any time. So we're going to talk about their 10 games, and then at the very end, we're going to talk about our number 11 that just missed the list. So here we go. Dave, you may start.
All right. My number 10 is Castles of Mad King Ludwig. It's kind of like a... Boy, I don't know how you describe that. Not really tile placement, but kind of Euro-ish. God, how would you describe
it? It's a tile-laying game.
Would you? Okay. Basically, what I like about it is I like that even though the scoring can be kind of complicated, I like how complicated it is. Right. I like how many different ways I can score, how many different kind of strategies I can have. Plus, it's really cool to see like what you've built and what your opponents have built and that kind of thing. And it works well anywhere between like 2, 3, or 4 player. You don't really lose anything by playing with fewer, or you don't really gain too much or lose anything by playing higher numbers either. But it's pretty solid.
Right. I like that game as well. I've only played a few times with you, so I didn't put it on the list. But I like it because it's tiling, which is probably my favorite thing right now. And yeah, I like that how wacky the scoring can be, and you can see, like you said, you can see what you've built, and it will be different than everybody else.
I think that's the biggest glaring negative behind it, is the scoring is... Scoring can be extremely complex for somebody who hasn't really played any kind of Euro or really any kind of deep designer gaming, because, you know, it's not just like buy a piece, place a piece. It's buy a piece, place a piece, score it, you know, maybe 3 or 4 other times, wait till the end of the game. It might score 2 or 3 more times. So there's a lot that goes into just like one, you know, kind of action, I guess you might say.
Right. I also like the money mechanism of getting to set price. That's
one of my favorite things.
If you can really kind of screw your opponent. Maybe not. You kind of got to guess a little bit with it.
I haven't seen that in really much anything else.
All right. My number 10 is... It's a family of games, and I sort of bounce around between which version I like, but that is Carcassonne. This is classic for most people that have been in the hobby for a long time. Tile placement game where you're building cities and roads and making these little medieval towns, and the board changes every single time you play. And I've only been playing it for a couple years, and the version I play the most now that I own is Carcassonne Amazonas, but I've played the original one maybe more now. I'm not sure. I kind of lost count when I stopped logging plays. But I really like this game because the board changes every time you play. It's super simple, but you can get really mean and a little strategic with your tile placement, even though it's random because you draw, you know, a tile off the top of the stack. But you have to place that tile, so you sort of have a tactical game that also has some strategy. And the artwork is neat. It looks like a painting when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a million versions of this game now, and I just really like it. I mean, I've been playing it for a while. It's a really good intro game. You can play it with pretty much anybody, even kids. Just a couple rules and you're up and going.
So. Yeah, I don't know what the age range is on it, but I feel like it's a really good intro one for kids too, that, and anybody really. And I think it's one that you can play with your kids. Like, I kind of thought about this as I was making the list, what is kind of appealing in terms of age ranges. I don't necessarily think about, can I play with my kids? I almost think more of, can the grandparents play with the grandkids? Because that gets a wider span of generations and ages. And I think that's one that the grandkids could bust out with grandma, grandpa, and be like, oh, let's play this. And they could, you know, they're going to have fun with it too. And yeah, like you said, it's a pretty good little intro game too.
All right, that was my number 10, Carcassonne.
My number 9 is Yamatai. I'm pretty much just a sucker for anything with little boats. I don't know why. Just like little boats. I like the sort of kind of area control aspect of it, but I also like all the different ways of scoring. I like the way that you can get the, I can't remember what they're called, but like different characters that you can sort of like purchase through points. And they give you different abilities, different ways of scoring and that kind of thing. I think it works well as a two-player as well. I like the kind of unique color scheme area control movement. It's kind of unique, and I haven't really seen that much anything else, and I've enjoyed, you know, all aspects of that.
Yeah, that's a really... I don't know, Days of Wonder never does bad stuff.
That's true.
That I've seen. I mean, I haven't played them all, but I've played a lot of Days of Wonder. And that one is definitely different, and I think that's one of the things the designer does, is he does sort of different things, but it's very family weight, which I like, but... with a little more. It's like family plus.
I think I'm also drawn in a lot by the art the theme of it. Just the kind of almost, you know, oriental fantasy-esque. You know, just all the kind of... It just looks really interesting. And it looks like a thing like, man, I wish there was more of this that I could learn about. Or like, you know, maybe a sequel game or something to that effect. Or I wish they would do more with that. But I don't know if they... will or have or
they have not, and I it's been out for a little while now, so I kind of doubt they will. But Days of Wonder doesn't do a lot of, unless it's Ticket to Ride,
that's true,
or Memoir 44, they don't do a lot of like expansion stuff, but that game has a lot of replay in it, and I like that you can do whatever you want to win. You can just go straight points all the time. Mm-hmm. You can go for money. You can just get the dudes, like you said, the, I don't know what they're called either, like helper people to do generals stuff. Yeah, like to do stuff.
Something like that.
You can go heavy on that and you can win either way. You can do just building and try to get building points really quick. But yeah, I really like that one as well.
So that's my number 9, Yamatai.
My number 9 is a game that I liked as soon as I played it. And it is very... it looks complicated, and then you play it, and it's way less complicated than you think. And it's sort of a Euro-style tableau-building game, and that is Alien Artifacts. This game, you set it up, you have all these cards out there, and you're... it's supposed to... it's a 4X-themed game that... instead of dice rolling, the thing I like is you flip cards, and each card has a number, and that simulates a die roll on a D6, and you can do different things. And while everybody has generally the same list of actions, each faction has a variable setup. I like that. So no matter what faction you pick, it has sort of, and it guides you to what sort of things you want to get. And you can do just one thing in this game. You know, you can, you're either building ships or planets or technology. And you can do just one of those things the entire game and still win. Or you can diversify, or you can actually follow your faction guideline and win that way. And then on top of that, sort of in the background, even though it's the name of the game, you can get the alien artifacts, which are rule-breaking, single-use cards. They might let you, you know, build something for free, which could be really huge. And when you use them matters, and you can go the entire game without using them at all. And getting them, and still win, and still, you know, beat your opponent by a few points. The scores in this game are very close. All the times I've played it, I think I've never been beaten by more than, like, 4 or 5 points. And I really like that. And it's super quick, because with two players, you only play 2 rounds, which you run the deck out twice. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do. You can fight aliens, and you can do all these other things, but it's very abstract Euro... money management, resource management. There's an expansion for it that I haven't actually played yet that adds a little more and more unique artifacts and unique scoring opportunities. That is Alien Artifacts, my number 9.
I haven't played that much, but it's in that same realm for me of, like, was that Race for the Galaxy or something like that? I just, man, I hate it when I have to have a sheet or the rule book's handy or something to learn or memorize like 20 different icons.
Right. That one's not as bad.
That one's not as bad.
races.
But
heavy.
Like, man, I hate that. Like, a couple of little things are fine, but it's like, here's all these different icons. I'm like, I'm not here for that.
I think they fixed that in, with race at least, they fixed that later on. But with Alien Artifacts, they add one more. So I think there's 6 icons now.
It's not as treacherous as others, but that's...
There is a bit of a curve.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see it, you're like, oh, I only have... And what I like about it is it looks nuts, but it's... Oh, I take this action. Well, here's these different options. But it's really 2 options. Do I do side A or side B? Side A is money, or side B is like money now, not later, or side B is power for the rest of the game, which is either making stuff cheaper, making stuff free, or getting me points.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like it.
My number 8 is Small World.
Ooh.
I like the way that you can get different kind of armies with different abilities, and you can play that game 100 times and never have the same setup.
Right, even with the base game.
Yeah, and I like area control. And I like the, not just the area control, but the, almost the sort of kind of, I feel like it's almost like an economic decision you have to make when you have to put one of your armies, I can't remember what the term is they use them, but when you
flip them?
Yeah.
Decline.
Decline, yeah. That's it. And then you get like, you get new armies and that kind of thing. It's a lot of interesting decisions. And even though it's almost like it's not really a war game at all, but it has shades of war game.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of are reminders anyway. And I kind of really like that. Because usually, typically, if you're playing a war game, you know, the stats and everything are always the same. The armies are always the same. You know, tanks always do this. Infantry always does that. But this, it's like, you know, I got, you know, dwarves that can fly now. Or I've got zombies mm-hmm. that can... you know, cast magic or something wacky. Like, it's not just wackiness, but it's also a lot of character, a lot of gameplay.
It's like family fun conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
With really neat artwork, and I've not done the expansions. I've only done the base game, but I know there's like a million expansions for it, and they usually just add new maps and new armies, and, but I mean, even in the base game, I think it's, man.
Yeah, that's another
20 races, maybe 15 races, and the equal amount of powers, and you randomize them every time, and I think you can even make your own. There's like a blank to make one of your own. And like, yeah, like you said, it's so simple, you know, put my stuff out, keep putting my stuff out, take it back, do it again till you spread too thin or not. And it's all about timing because it's quick. I mean, you could play this game 2-player and if you know what you're doing, like half hour. Maybe.
I also feel like I've seen that in, like, that also seems like that's kind of like an intro game too, because I've seen that a lot, like in, I think I've seen it like Walmart or something too. Like, I've seen it pretty much just everywhere.
It's
like Days of Wonder gets out there.
Yeah, they have a lot wider reach now with things like, well, Ticket to Ride, mostly. Because a lot of their stuff you don't see anymore, even out of print, like Shadows Over Camelot and stuff like that. But there's a million Ticket to Rides, and they're like, well, you know, that's sort of the intro game for everybody that made games in America, really. And then things like Small World, and there's Family Weight, you know, style games to do different sort of intro mechanics, and you have a wider appeal. You know, fantasy has a wider appeal than, say, like, you know, war games to most.
That's
family stuff, so you know, and the artwork doesn't hurt, and I don't know, it's just really fun.
It's easier to say to the kids, like, oh, let's go get the zombies, then, oh, let's go get the Nazis.
Yeah, right, especially now. So.
But that's my 8 Small World.
Interesting. My number 8 is a game that I've liked for a while now, and it is, the edition I have is the one that I like the best out of them, and that is Machikoro Bright Lights Big City.
Mm.
I really like this game, dice rolling game, where you you roll dice and you allocate those dice to buy, or to use buildings, and you buy buildings and The pips on the die roll determine what the building does. And what I like about this game, and I think is the only negative about this game, is that it's really mean to new people. Because you can, if you know what there's the cards that are randomized out there, but you can get multiple copies of them and trigger the effect multiple times. So if you really know the cards in the game, and you're not nice like me, you can really hammer somebody new that's just learning the game. However, it's really quick, and you can play it again, and they'll know what they're doing after the first play. I also like that it's a bit of a race, because the first person to build all their buildings wins. And each building gives you a special power, so you have to decide, do I want to keep triggering my buildings to get money and get other things, and just hoard all of my money to do one really big turn, or do I just build my buildings as quick as possible to end the game? And I really like the cuteness of the artwork that hides how vicious this game can be. And this version is the reason, the one I like, because it combines parts of both expansions and tweaked the base game to make sort of one master edition game. And I think it's Target exclusive only, but I've seen it other places now. I think they loosed that license up a little bit. But that is Machikoro Bright Lights Big City.
I like the game a lot, but I despise dice rolling. It's probably one of my least favorite mechanics.
It is random.
That one does it in a way where you can have things happen even when you're not the one rolling the die, which is great. And it's not... I feel like it takes the... Settlers of Catan is a great game, but I feel like sometimes the dice rolling in that makes it bad, whereas with this, it makes the dice rolling a positive mm-hmm. in a very, non-boring way.
It's, yeah, I mean, you're always involved, because, you know, yeah, I roll a die, and you can plan. I like that you can plan in this game. You know, if you just take, you know... Oh, I'm going to get a bunch of cards that are always going to hit on a 2 or a 3 or whatever. Like, you know, kind of play the probability of the dice. That's fine. But if you're smart and you can see after a while, you know, you could get enough buildings that no matter what's rolled, you're getting something. The other player might get something too, but you're going to get something better. And, you know, buying things, you can have the multiple copies and buying things out from under people, I really like. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, you're always involved. You know, one of the buildings you roll, if it's a certain color... Everybody gets it, but if one of the, you know, if it's a red building, you take it from your opponent. And I've seen games where people hoard money, and I take it all, or take half of it. And you're basically starting them again, but within a turn or two, they've recovered that. So it's not like you're just sweeping the game, like, but you really got to be careful and always pay attention to who bought what and everything, and that's what I really like about it.
There's a lot of indirect... player interaction, yeah. Indirect take that, which leads into my number 7, which is San Juan, which I really like how you basically, like, you have only a few options that you can take, and you basically, if it's your turn, you pick an option, and your opponent gets the lesser option. Well, it's great when, you know, oh man, you know, I know Chris wants to do this option, well, I'm going to take it first so he gets the lesser one, haha. You know, so it's...
Or none.
Or not, or you get no option because I took this. Yeah. So it's a lot of, you know, you can kind of think and strategize if you want. And, you know, you can. But, man, you can get ruined really quick just by, because somebody, you know, took the one thing you wanted. And it's not usually that devastating, but, gosh, is it... It's about as indirect take that as I can think of. And I really like that.
Yeah, I like that game a lot as well. I want to play that with more people. Yeah. If I can teach Baron, if you listen to this, and I know you might, we're going to play this game and you're just going to deal with it.
Yep.
It's really easy. It's like 2 rules. You just got to pay attention. But because it gets, I think, a little more competition. But even with 2, I like that the balance is the first player gets another option. Yeah. So the first player gets...
Or better.
Or yeah, well, I mean, even they get 2 cards instead of 1, yeah. But then it rotates on the following turn, so you really got to plan, man, do I take this out of hate? Because next turn, I might not get that option.
Well, that's true. Like,
or because the other player is going to get two ahead of me, and it just balances back and forth.
You could take the option that's going to be beneficial to me, or do I take the spiteful choice?
Yes.
And I like
the spiteful choice.
Yeah.
Because I don't care if I win. I want to make it fun. And if I'm going to lose, it's going to be hard.
Man, you look at that game, and you look at the boxer, you look at the setup and stuff, and you don't
it's just cards.
Think that at all. Yeah.
It's a stack of cards and two tiles.
Yeah. It's a really inconspicuous kind of game. It's just sort of like, oh, there's that, but man, there's a lot of, I mean,
right. It took
a lot in that.
It took Race for the Galaxy, because I cannot remember which one was first. I'm pretty sure Race for the Galaxy was first, and took all of the complication out of it and brought it down to anybody can play this game. Mastering the game is what's hard.
Oh yeah,
and I'm terrible at it, but I love that game.
San Juan,
that's
my number seven.
That's a good choice. My number seven is a game that I actually haven't played a whole lot, but the plays I have played, even the single player, I really, really like. I like it because of the artwork. I like it because of the theme and the mechanisms in it, and you can do some really cool combos, and that is 51st State Master Set.
Oh.
This game used to be a little higher on my list, but I just don't play it as much as I used to, because, you know, I play a lot of stuff. And, but for a while, I was playing the single player even in this, which works pretty well a lot, just looking at all the cards. And 51st State is it's from Portal. The IP is based on some old, like, Polish RPG that's super out of print and nobody plays, so it doesn't matter. But the artwork has been recycled from that and the lore and everything to put in this game, and it's a really cool, it's like Euro with some meanness. So your resource management, you're getting cards, and it's almost like deck building, but you're just putting them out in a tableau in front of you and triggering abilities and so on to get items to turn in for points, and it's all about points and everything, and you're sort of racing to get to a certain point number. But what I like is each of the factions are different. They all specialize in something. Some are better than others. And the expansions help balance that more that come in this set, which is why I like the Master Set, because there is a lot of more balance than the base game. But you can get some really big turns in this game, and you can get really mean and cut your opponent off from what they're doing, which I really like in games. If I'm going to do take that, I want it to be mean but fair. And this game is both, because they can come back. You know, you take some cards or you shut them down, but even if you blow up their building, they still can use that building as currency to build something else, and sometimes that's what they want you to do. So I really like that. There's a lot of kind of outthinking your opponent in this game. That's 51st State Master Set.
I like the art in that, too. It's interesting looking art. My number six is Element. I really like abstract strategy games. I would almost say it's my favorite kind, but it's not something that a lot of people really like. But I like the idea of basically you get different little colored tokens and they're selected randomly and they have different abilities, each little token. But you have like a dude that moves around, and it's kind of, I don't really know what it's like. I mean, it's not really much like it, but it's sort of like a weird Chinese checkers-esque.
Yeah,
it's not even that.
It's almost, almost area control, but not.
Yeah. It's more like trap your opponent.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of makes it area control-esque. And I kind of like the idea of, you don't see a lot of games where my objective is to catch you, but as I'm catching you, you could inadvertently turn that around and, you know,
right.
Trap
it's,
me.
Yeah, of. I mean, because you're sort of sharing pieces.
And it's a thinky game.
Oh, yeah, very. That is a really cool game. I like that, and I haven't played it with that yet. I was reading
and it's multiplayer, and you do multiplayer too, which is rare for abstract.
It plays up to four, and it doesn't change anything. The only thing that it changes, which is what I was going to say that I like that I want to try, is if you either forget which character you are, because the rotation wheel, there's reminders everywhere, you know what does what, but that also determines in multiplayer which character you're after, and if you forget who you're after and even accidentally capture the wrong person, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everybody's trying to capture one other person, but you're also trying to maneuver that so that you're not helping your opponents capture somebody else. And or maybe you are, and you're forcing them so they capture the wrong person, like you, and you're both out. But that's a really good game. Yeah. I like.
It's fun.
All right. My number six is also an abstract strategy game, because I am starting to like those a lot more as well. That is Santorini. And I really like Santorini, one, because it's two-player. Predominantly two-player. Either two or three, and three-player is not so good. And what I like is it's, you know, it's colorful and things. Usually I don't care about, in abstract strategy, I really don't care about component look. I care about component quality. But the 3D effect on Santorini, you could play that game just on a flat table or like a chessboard, really. And but it wouldn't be the same. I love the buildings. I love the special powers that the characters give you. And you don't have to play with the special powers, but there's no reason to not play with the special powers. Because they're really easy. You could teach this game to almost anybody. If they like checkers, you could teach them Santorini. If they like any sort of just, I'm trying to outmaneuver my opponent kind of thing, this game is definitely one for them. Walmart has, you can buy this at Walmart now. They have there was like a big deluxe edition that a bunch of people bought, and then it was too expensive, so they, Spin Master reprinted it in a equally good package. All they did was take out this huge elevated nonsense that was a pain anyway, and now it's super cheap. I think this game's less than $30, maybe even cheaper than like $20, and you can buy it pretty much anywhere, and it's great for families. It's fun. Kids are going to like it because you're building little buildings up and moving around. The pieces are really nice, but there's a lot of strategy there, and I mean, you can play it in, I have won and lost a game in less than 10 minutes. Or you could have a game that goes 30 minutes. I mean, if you get really, really thinking and a really good opponent. So that's Santorini, my number six. Great abstract strategy game.
It's solid. I like the... There's just not really much in the way of like 3D building and stuff. You don't get that much, and that's really cool. And it's something that... It's not a gimmicky 3D. It's like this...
Right, like it is it the game. It
kind of needs this.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe theoretically you could probably not do it like that and use different shapes or colors or something, but man, it adds so much to it. It really sets it apart from a lot of other games, and that's... I know component quality can do that, but gosh, it's just a little game.
If you see this game from a distance, yeah, you're like, all right, I want to go see what it is. Like,
which is the exact opposite of San Juan, which right, you can see it from looks a terrible. Distance. It looks brown. Like, what are those bums
brown
doing?
On brown with like old textbook artwork. Not to, I mean, I like. I discovered the art about myself is not the that best I like of San Juan. Cheesy, outdated Euro artwork and cubes and stuff. But yeah, San Juan is not a looker.
Yeah,
but in any
Santorini
respect.
Will. Santorini get you, is you awesome. Know, if you don't know what that is, people are like, "What's that over there?"
Yeah, it's, people will want to play it, and it's quick enough. You can just go through the list. All right, what's your number five?
Number five, get in the top five. I can't believe we haven't crossed over yet.
Me either.
Yeah,
that's what I was like, worrisome. Like, I know there's one. I know one we're going to cross on.
Well, there's one we are going to cross on eventually.
There may be more. I'm going to say that there is...
We're probably going to get a lot of crossover in the top five.
I'm going to say that...
Maybe.
Four out of the five we will cross on.
That is a bold claim.
Yep, bud.
You're not substantiating. All right, well, my number five is Burano.
That's a good one.
It's kind of like, oh, boy, howdy, is that a complex-looking game.
But
really
it's not.
Like, yeah, I really like the art on it. I like the Euro system. It's, you're just... Putting things together, build points, little cubes, right. Cube actions, just...
Cube action
there's
is
so
the,
many, there's so
the
much,
gimmick of the game, but yeah, it's awesome.
It's just like, man...
It's unique.
It's such an under-the-radar game that, you know, I think we're the only ones that even know about
it. Not anymore. I've been commenting on this game for years because I love this game too. And I like the pyramid system, the action selection. It's just a combination of a lot of stuff that is in every other Euro game, but it's fun and it's colorful and it's just different in this. I've seen a lot more people... They didn't even do a second edition because I would have bought it for no reason. But this game is showing up a lot more on Instagram, and it different convention picture things. So I think it's just getting a wider release now, mm-hmm. which is weird because it's old. Old. I mean, it's 4 years old, 3 years, something like that now. But, yeah.
I don't know that it's... I wouldn't say the art's bad, per se. No. But, man, it's also one of those games where you look at it and it's like, wow, there's a lot going on in there just because it's really complex looking. I don't know that it's necessarily... I don't know what the weight is on it, but I feel like it's kind of weighty.
It's like 3 out of 5.
Yeah, it's kind of weighty,
it's like mid-weight. It takes a little while. I mean, it's like an hour and a half game.
But it's also one of these things where it's like, you know, you could choose to score with, you know, basically... It's got boats, because I like boats, and you could score, like, I'm just going to do boats and, like, fishing and stuff, or you could make, like, textiles, or you could build mm-hmm. buildings, like, so many different ways that you could go into it.
And they all work.
And they all work.
But you have to, at some point during the game, you must diversify something. It might just be, like, one turn. I'm going to textile this one turn, or I'm going to fish this one. I mean, fishing is big. Or maybe two turns, because the game's really quick, and the more you go along, the less turns you get. And I like that, because it's only, I think it's 16 turns for the entire game. And you have to be able to pay for everything. I like that. You can't just do awesome turns all the time, because if you run out of money, you can't do a turn. And I've done that, and you will lose the game if you have no money for, like, two turns. You're done.
I also like that one of the component aspects of it is that you get colorful little cubes, and a lot of games have cubes in them, but these cubes are like bigger than your average D6.
Huge. Yeah.
And they're not just a random like resource thing, like, oh, I got a whole bunch of white ones for no reason. Like, you actually can build like a pyramid structure, which is based on like what actions you get to take or what colored cubes are at the top. And then they don't even stop there. They're also basically the foundations with which you build buildings on.
Yeah.
So, like, as far as a cube resource goes, they're doing a lot with this one little cube that a bunch of other games just need some kind of a token to identify, like, oh, you know, you got wood, here's this cube. With this thing, it's like, there's no wasted
space,
no wasted materials, there's nothing like that. Like, it's...
You... And I like that those things change every round.
Yeah.
So it's every 8 turns that changes, so you can't just be like, for the whole game, you know, pink cubes are fishing for, you know, each, so 8 turns, and then you're like, next round, you're like, oh, I have all these excess of pink cubes because I thought I was going to be able to do it. Well, no, next turn, like, there's something else useless, and you have to use prestige or something to trade them in mm-hmm. to get what you need or diversify. I mean, that might be the thing, is you might get by until the final round, and you're like, crap, I have these leftover cubes. I'm going to turn them into this action that I haven't done, but now it's useful.
It's weird because sitting here listening to us talk about this, this sounds like an amazingly complex
game. I know, it's really not.
It's not. I don't know how you convince it.
I think it's like a 7, like a 6.9 on BGG on that scale, so that's decent for them. It might even be less than 3 out of 5 complexity. This is the first Euro game I know I played after Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
And this is the first resource management Euro game I ever played. And I thought all the components, it took me like 20 minutes to set it up.
I thought I was going to die. The same way, like, it was basically the first, you know, outside of Ticket to Ride Euro game I played.
It looks so busy.
And it kind of got me into the idea of it. So it can't be that complex. If that's basically your intro,
Ticket to Ride, Monopoly, and we're coming into Burano game one. And like, wow. But yeah.
My number 5.
Very good choice. You should check that game out. My number 5 is another abstract strategy game. It's the last abstract on my list. And this is one that I've had success playing with 2 people. I've had fun playing it with the almost the max player count. I think we might have played it at 8. For a game that looks beautiful, but honestly, you could have played this with anything, with paper. And that is Suro. And Suro is an awesome-looking tile-laying abstract strategy game. It's just lines on squares. And you're connecting those lines that automatically move your piece, and if your opponent's piece is there, moves their piece as well. And you're trying to either force them off the board by making them make bad choices of their placement and send their character off the board, or collide with another player, which will remove both of them. And the last man standing wins. And it's very, I like that you grab multiple different tiles, you choose the one you place, but you have to place one, and eventually you'll have all of yours placed, and they might be bad. And no matter what, if it's a bad move, you have to place it. So, and it's really neat to outthink your opponent with that slight bit of randomness and that tactical gameplay, and you could win this game in 5 minutes, you might take, you know, 30 minutes. I like that in abstract strategy, and it looks really, really good.
It's... You could easily print and play this game,
yes.
But man, they really...
It helps to not. Good,
yeah. Like, I mean, there's... It's kind of like they dressed it up as much as you could for such a simple game.
It looks like an ancient game.
Yes.
Yeah, it's...
It looks like you're playing something... It almost looks like you're playing something from 1,000 years ago.
Right.
Because they've done
this, along with Carcassonne, this is one of those games that, if you like games at all... I mean, I don't care what they are. If you're just like classic games like Monopoly or chess or whatever, you should have this game. It's really affordable. This is one of those, you know, I think this is one of those grandparents' games too.
Yeah.
It's not complicated. You can sit down and teach this. The age range says 8 and up. You could go less than that. And could sit down today, say, here's the rules. I place a tile. I see what it connects to. It moves that piece automatically. Done. That's the rules. Don't go off the edge. Don't hit somebody.
Calliope makes good-looking games.
Yeah, it's very, very fun. I highly recommend it. It's still in print, so if you like any kind of game or might like games, and especially if you like games that will work with large groups down to small groups in a short amount of time, it takes 20 minutes max, usually, and that is Sorrow, my number 5.
Moving right along, my number 4 is Scythe.
Ooh.
It's got some of the best art I've ever seen for a game. It's got some of the best art, period. It just looks gorgeous. Like, I
no
could
doubt.
Take just, you know, like, just grab any card, blow it up, put it on the wall. I'm good with that. It just looks gorgeous. It's mostly, kind of Euro, but also area control, some combat if you want to go that route. A lot of different options, a lot of different ways of playing. It's got kind of like the, I don't know what you call that, like action.
Selection
kind of thing. Yeah, I really like that. Which, I was thinking there was another game that I mentioned that had that, but then I realized it didn't.
San Juan
kind of has that.
But this is, everybody's is different.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of.
But Scythe is just... It can be a little bit, maybe long, but man, I don't mind that.
Two-player is a little shorter, I think. But yeah, this game can't be short. I think the length of this game is right, but also the length, this could be one of those games like Risk, where you're like, we're just going to hang out for a couple days, and we're going to play Scythe, and we're going to take just plan out our entire turn, and then could just be wrecked.
The very idea of... Let's sit down.
Weekend-long Scythe.
The idea of, like, let's sit down and play an hour to 2 hours of Risk, or let's play an hour to 2 hours of Scythe, like, that just makes me sick to the stomach. Why would you ever play Risk when you play
Yes.
Risk is basically my least favorite game of all time.
It is one of mine.
I just
it is not my least.
That game.
That's going to be on a later cast of my most hated game of all time, and it's going to be scathing, and anybody that listens to it that likes that game is a fool. That is a not necessarily a true statement, because the game I'm talking about my mom likes, but she'll never listen to this, so it's fine. Yeah. She's a fool.
Yep. Scythe.
But Scythe, yes,
Scythe is excellent.
Is a great game.
Just look it up online. Scythe, board game, look at the art, and you're going to be sold.
Even the, and we haven't even finished the, at all, the campaign expansion, but
so
the,
much to do.
Yeah, you could, it, even the base game, which I had forever, is infinite replayability. You can randomize things, and no matter, you know, you might have had a strategy that worked one game, and you play it again, completely different, because of how things come out. Great, great game. My number 4 is also Scythe.
Excellent.
For everything that Dave said.
Yes.
This was actually my number 1 for a long time. Well, since I bought it, when it, like a year or so after it came out, maybe 2. And I like everything about it. I like all the expansions so far. You don't need, like I said, you don't need any of that stuff. And I haven't even played with everything. I like the different factions. I think there's, with the campaign, I think there's 9 factions now. That's all they're doing. They're not doing any more with it. This game is, so they say, this game is done. But even just the base game is like 6 factions or 5 or something. And they're all different. They all determine sort of how you start playing the game, but not necessarily how you win the game. I have never won this game, at all, even in single player. And it's not difficult, it's just, it's very thinky at times, but the gameplay is so smooth. Like, the mechanics are sort of a background to your strategy.
I think it's a game that's going to age really, really well, because the art is basically timeless. I can't imagine ever thinking this is going to be bad, because, like, it looks so good that... there's some games, you know, you look particularly like in the... You know, the way some of the art was done in the 80s and some of the games and stuff, it was really, the art was kind of shoddy. But this, like, I mean, in 50 years, that's still probably going to be one of the best looking games.
And it's one of the only games that I know of where the art came first.
Yeah, that's probably why it's so good.
Wow, like, the alternate World War One, and then they put lore on top of it.
Yeah.
And it's included in the game. Does not affect the story whatsoever, like, just playing the game.
We didn't even mention the mechs. Like, the mechs
are
gorgeous.
They're
really well done.
I've seen people that paint them. You don't need to paint them, but you can if you want to. And they're all super diverse. What they do is super diverse. And what mech ability you choose and when the time happens can really affect what you're doing.
We didn't even talk about the idea of what the art actually is. It's like an alternate World War One, where there are mechs. And
it's after, Nikola Tesla had prototypes in this capital on the map, and they sort of, like, when everything was going down after World War One, all the countries that were left sort of pulled back to each other, and now it's this arms race, area control kind of story, but they're pumping out, like, weird mechs and tech that isn't supposed to be there, so instead of, you know, you're gonna have a guy farming his field, like, putting in wheat, but now there's, like, using a mech instead of... Yeah, bears instead of horses and, weird little things.
Looking on one of the box arts there, like, there's a cavalry charge against a mech.
Right.
Like, what more do you need to know?
It's great. This game is great for anybody that likes anything. This game is awesome. I will put that out there, that this game is incredible.
It's hard to... Yeah, it's solid.
And you have to see it. This is definitely a table presence game. Number three. All right,
top three. My number top three is Talisman.
Oh, what a good choice.
Boy, that's a timeless game. I feel like that game
We've been playing it for, like,
less than a year. It's been hanging around for 83. Since the 80s, yeah. I feel like that's a game that's going to be in print
forever.
Just like Monopoly or anything else. Like, it's going to be around forever. It's kind of like your typical, sort of typical fantasy board game lore. Like, all the sword and sorcery movies of the 80s and make it a board game. And that's basically Talisman, but then better.
And it's roll and move.
And then, like, Dante's Inferno.
And it's good.
Like, yeah, well, that, like, the only negative I have with it really is somebody could get really excellent rolls, and there's nothing you can do about it, and just happen to draw really good stuff.
That's true.
And you can just end up getting really bad stuff.
But I think that's the fun.
Yeah, it's a game that I like. Even if I'm getting destroyed, I still like playing the game.
You're going to have fun moments of, well, I'm adventuring. Crap, this is a useless item that I found, or I can't beat this monster. And then, yeah, somebody else is just having a really easy time. But that could change moving into the inner layers, and it's really, even playing this game a lot and knowing all the cards and seeing all the cards, it's still fun to see those cards. It makes you better, I think, and to see when those cards come out, you're like, well, man, I really hope it's not this card. I know it's in there somewhere. Let me, like, that sense of discovery and just moving onto a spot, it really is like a old classic adventure movie.
I feel like it's kind of the way, like, the first time you played Skyrim in a board game.
Everything's new.
Everything's new, and you're discovering new things and that kind of thing. It's really... Boy, there's so much exploration in the game, and the art is great.
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of gameplay, it's so much fun to see somebody... Because basically, you have, like, two stats. You have strength, which is basically your combat, then you have magic, or craft, which is basically your magic. But it's so great when somebody who's been building up their strength all of a sudden has to fight the demon, which can only be beaten by magic, and they get totally destroyed. They're hopeless.
Right. Land out the window. Yeah. Start again.
Yeah, like,
or you die.
Yeah, or you die, or something like that. Like, there's so much. It's almost like a, it's like a D&D campaign in a board game. Almost.
Right,
and
it's quick.
Yeah.
2 hours. Like,
it's good with multiplayer too. Two player, three player, four, whatever.
Like it's really, so good. It's really fun. I really like that game a lot.
The art's good. I don't remember if I said that enough.
My number three, Talisman.
Yeah, there you go.
for everything Dave said again. See, we won't make it all, but we were pretty close. 2 out of 5. So far. I really like it, too. I've been looking at this game for a while, and I'm just like, I thought it was just, you know, outdated and whatever, because I never saw a lot of people playing it or reviews or anything about it, and then I saw this is the newer edition, and Games Workshop has the license back from FFG, so minis are really good.
Yeah,
on top of that,
good, yeah.
Character diversity is great. There's a couple characters that basically do the same thing, but that lets multiple people have it, really. But they're all really fun. I think there's, like, 14 characters to play. Item stuff, like I said, the more you know the game, it doesn't mean you're going to win. It's just, it's still fun after knowing everything. And I like seeing people who haven't played as much or newer people play this game for the first time. You're like, oh, it's, I roll when I move to this spot. Oh, I go to a town. Let me flip a card. Crap. Yeah, it's the demon. Well,
I also, one of the little things that makes me giggle and laugh is kind of back in the 80s where your race is also your class.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I am a ghoul. Yeah.
It's like you might have a warrior.
Or an elf.
It's like, here's like a warrior. He's obviously human. Here's a wizard. It's obviously human. Here's troll. Troll is race and class.
And elf is race and class.
Dwarf.
A human race, assassin is just assassin.
Yeah. But it's just, your race is your class. And it reminds me of like, I think Golden Axe had that too.
Yeah.
Like dwarf,
yeah. You're like, I'm going to be a dwarf.
Was your race and your class.
Yes.
Oh gosh, HeroQuest does that too. But yeah, it's solid. And we've only played the base.
Right, there's a lot of expansions. They're really hard to get because they're out of print, but they're becoming, people have been selling them a little bit, and you can find them. I really want to try some of those. There's a Grim Reaper expansion I want, lets you move a Reaper around and screw with your opponents. There's like, they add more cards. The Reaper doubles the amount of starting cards, and each expansion adds, I think, like 2 characters. So you can get a lot for this game, but even just the base game alone, at least starting out, is awesome. Great replay value.
Worth every penny.
That was Talisman.
My number two, which was already on your list, and you should be ashamed of yourself that it was that low, my number two is Machu Koro, which, despite my distaste for dice rolling, boy, that game really just... Oh, boy.
It does only dropped a couple spots from a year
or two
ago.
I like
that
game.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And people hate it. I don't know why. It's fun.
I like that things can happen to me and for me, even though it's not my turn. And I don't like the die rolling aspect of it, but I like the... I almost attribute it to... like a weird, sick game of gambling,
kinda,
but
yeah.
Also bingo,
right,
and kind
right.
of win the lottery.
Like, I rolled a 1,
so
everybody gets
a
1.
There's that weird gambler's addiction that I have
yes.
with it, which is like, man, I really need that 8, come on 8. And, you know, and then it's like a 7. Crap, totally useless.
Wasted
turn. You know, wasted my turn, it's ruined me. So I think maybe that game's so high on mine because I have addictive personality, and that game kind of
fuels it.
That, but gosh, I really like that game, and I think it does the die roll. I don't really like roll and move, but that
right,
the dice rolling in that is
it's also more,
a little
like,
different.
It matters.
Yeah,
more.
It's,
roll and
it's
move
not,
is like, oh, I move one space, I get a
yeah.
thing. This is crap. I really need was counting on my roll.
It's, yeah, it's a little bit. It's just a little different than it is in other games.
Right, it's like dice rolling plus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a good choice. My number two is a new, one of the newest games to my collection, and I instantly really liked it and knew it was going to be top 10. Because I've only played the base version of it, not the advanced version, and that is Rajas of the Ganges.
Oh, that is good.
I have played this game, man... 6 times now, maybe more, and it made top 10 because...
That's got a little boat in it, and I like
it. It has boats. The boats are very nice. The component quality in the game is great. The board does look super busy, but once you set up and figure out that some of it is just fluff, then it cuts down a little bit. But the it has a lot of things I like. It has resource management. I like that. The die rolling in this game is really easily mitigated. I like that because it is dice placement.
That's almost more like a resource, though.
It is. You have money and dice.
Yeah, your die are really more like, all right, roll them. What do you have? A 5. All right, 5 is like buy you things.
Right, like 5. Yeah, you know, so with a 5, really, I can get 3 options. Yeah, with, or with like a 1, purple, I can get well, you have 10.
Yeah, like a purple whatever. Die. All right, purple die gets me that. Doesn't matter what the number is. So
it combines. Yeah. I like that aspect that it's resource based. You can do a lot of fun. Sneaky sort of things with where you put it at to sort of, you know, take first player away from people and also get things. You're always getting something in this game. I've never seen a wasted turn.
That's true.
It also has tile placement, which again I love, and the tile placement you can get combinations by where you put them, and also like one-time benefits, and also activate them again based on if that's a possible action. Sort of like, I don't have anything to do, but there's never any something not to do.
You could totally ignore the
time. Right, you're right, and still win. Yeah. The idea of the game is you have a fame track that you get by building buildings and some other abilities, and then a money track, which, you know, a lot of things give you money, and you want them to either meet or cross. Once that happens, your opponent gets to place, and it's worker placement as well, which I like. It's a lot of little Euro things, but the worker placement is just sort of a marker, almost, of what you're doing. But once your fame and things cross, your opponent gets to place one final worker. And if they get theirs to meet or cross, then you have a real scoring, and the difference is the number in your fame and money. So you can think you're just totally going to devastate your opponent because, I made mine cross by 3 points. Your opponent has one turn, makes theirs cross by 10, you still lose. It's straight, it's win-lose. There's no points, that's so simple to score, but you really, it's fun to plan everything out, or you can just, you're not at the mercy of the dice usually like you are in other things.
No, not at all.
And it looks great. It's a German couple that make these games. They make a lot of different games. They make escape room games, Euro games, everything.
It's a meticulously done board.
It is, yeah, like way overproduced art, and even like the die. The die are really cool. Like these little placement. You have these little like Indian goddess boards. So, like, you didn't even need them, but it was just really, really cool. Price point's not very high either. That is Rajas of the Ganges, my number 2.
I also like that because everything with the Euro aspect of it is really to buff the idea that that game is really a race.
Right.
And that's
just, the Euro not part is just you how see. You yeah. get there.
It's usually like, oh, you're just building up points, but that's like, I can see how close he's getting. I better get my act together. It. Yeah, right. I got to do something about this. And I can't really do anything to you. I can just do better for myself.
Right. And you can do a little bit of, like, I'm going to take a spot you might have wanted, but there's
no... Yeah, it's very subtle.
It's sort of like you're each doing your own thing, but you're constantly watching that, oh, man, he got 6 money or 6 fame. I only have 2. All right, I really got to focus on that. Well, I got to pay a little extra to do that better thing, but it's going to pay off. And there's, yeah, it's constant stress after, like, the first couple turns. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it is a very stressful game.
All right, ladies and gents, number 1...
My number 1, which was on Chris's list, is Suro, because it's been my number 1 for a really long time, because it's ridiculously easy, you can teach it to anybody, and it's great for basically all ages, works great on any player count.
It's 5 out of 5 crossover, bud.
Yep. I have not
seen, expected that to be your number 1, though.
I have not
knew it was seen in the top.
A game that can play 2 player, or... 3 or 4, however many, and it'd be just as good. Like, it's so seamlessly done with player count. It's so ridiculously simple, but that's what makes it so good. That's why games like, checkers and chess have lasted so long, because they're not wildly complex. There's more in the way you play rather than the basic rules. Mm-hmm. And you can play that game and totally leave each other alone. And or you're not. Just going to see who wins. Or you can go right at them.
Yeah, right at them. Either one will work. Maybe.
It's just so much fun to do that. So much fun to mess with people. Like, man.
I remember.
And I've seen the, and I've played a little bit of the kind of aquatic one, which it's got boats, which I should like. I don't like it at all.
I don't either.
I don't like that
I watched a video on it. I read a review. I watched a how-to, because I was like, oh man, more Sorrow, gotta be great. Don't like it at all. Love the board.
Oh yeah.
If I could just buy the board,
this is good.
Like a a thrift store or something, I would and play it on that. But
like I mean, it's like
you took a game that doesn't need to be more complex.
It could, I mean, man, that's a game that you, if you've got in your collection, you're going to be playing that for decades.
This is my go-to, I did this with my mom, because my mom doesn't play, she likes card games, but she doesn't play any sort of, I mean, I taught her Ticket to Ride, but that was like, you know, her first real Euro kind of thing. But Sorrow was the first game when she's like, hey, I want to play one of your games, like a year or two ago. We sat down, and I'm like, that's my go-to, hey, do you like games, or do you play games? All right, we're going to play a game. That's my go-to intro game to people. If they want a short game, it's Sorrow. If they want a little longer, it's Ticket to Ride.
But it's, I think it's kind of the almost an opposite of maybe Scythe or Verano, where it's all very, very busy.
Right. This is super basic.
Super basic, and but that doesn't. I guess we're like, you know, I'm probably not going to sit down and play Sorrow for 2 hours.
Right.
But I could play a couple of games in, and good. That's fun.
You're like, sweet, and they're going
to
be
and
fun.
And that's cool. And I know that, you know, I'm going to come back to that again at some point. And right. The only thing I can think of why anybody wouldn't like it is if you're just not really a fan of that art, or you don't like how simple it is. Like, you may feel like that's just not much of a game, but...
That's true.
I think if you played it and played it with maybe...
More.
Yeah, like play it maybe with more people, but man, I just don't... I don't think that... Simplicity might hurt other games, but I don't think it hurts that.
Right. My number one is the game that I flip-flopped on back and forth, and because I play it more now, and thankfully, and it's just easier to... Which is shocking, because it takes forever. Easier to set up and get going. My number one for a long time, and now it has regained the spot, that is Verano.
Yep, it's good.
I've gotten to play this. Initially, it was just me and Dave, and I got my other friend into it, and she actually really likes it. And I joke for a long time, this game is longer to set up and take down to actually play. That's not true, but initially it took me forever to set this game up. That is true. But now now I can set up Verano really, really quick. Some of the pieces are small and a little fiddly. I don't care. Like, I don't care if this game had worse artwork. Whatever. It's just fun. And I like to see people's reaction when you set it up. It's a very good table presence, as we said before. They look a little scared the first time. You're like, oh my gosh. And then you explain, like, you know, this does this. Oh, okay. I can get, you know, money or cards, or I can get this. Oh, I got to pay more money to do more stuff. That makes sense. Like, it's a relatable mechanism.
I also think that's a game that maybe the biggest negative is if you're just at the store and you want to buy a game and you sit down and try to play it, if you don't have somebody that knows how to play it, you're probably going to be in trouble.
And I mean,
that's the only negative I can really think of.
I usually play games wrong. Every time. Reading the rule book or not. I think playing a lot of games, you just kind of like start getting intuitive with rules and don't. But, Oh, my. All right, we got to quickly do our number 11 because apparently with this app, I can only do things at an hour. So, what's your number 11?
Letters from Whitechapel.
Oh, that was great. That was mine for a long time. Yeah, I love that game.
Excellent game. Yeah.
Yes, also play that game. It's excellent. As he said, my number 11 is Smash Up. It gives me all the fun of dueling games with a little bit of silly, but it's so easy. It's like two or three rules, and you're also racing to points, and I really like it. I love all the wacky combos. It's incredibly cheap, and each expansion is its own game on its own, so if you don't like any of the base things, you just get an expansion for like $10 or something, and you have four factions, you can play that game an infinite amount of times, which is really interesting, and most games don't do that. All right, that was our top 10. I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And thank you for listening. And until next time, keep on gaming.